At the end of the parsha, when we read the second paragraph of Shema, V'ayayim Shemoa, you have the famous phrase, U'lavdo b'chol levavchem. And the Sifrei, analyzing this, says, what is avoda shebelev? The Rav translated here avoda not as worship, but sacrifice of the heart. What is the sacrifice of the heart? Ezehu avoda shebelev zu tefillah. Okay? Well, the Rambam, picking up on this Sifrei, analyzing our parsha, says there's a mitzvah doraisa to daven every day. There's a mitzvah doraisa, men, women, to daven every day. Okay? And the Rambam is unique in that area because most Rishonim follow the school of the Ramban that there's only a mitzvah to daven in a scenario of a serious external crisis based upon Parshas Baloska, Al Hatzar Hatzor Eschem. If there's a famine, if we're besieged, if there's a war, if there's a disease, so then Vahare Osem Bechatzosros, then we cry out to God. And when you look at this machlokas, it's very challenging because it's like the Rambam is in left field. There's a mitzvah to daven every day, independent of the circumstances. And the Ramban says, no, there's only an obligation to daven. Tefillah is only an obligation midoraisa in a state of crisis. And the Rav had a beautiful explanation of this machlokas, because, you know, methodologically, the idea is to always find what is the common denominator between the two sides and what is the very issue that the two sides of a machlokas disagree upon. It's not like, you know, you're in left field, I'm in right field. And the Rav said something very beautiful. He says, the mechayiv, that which obligates us to daven, is an es tzara, is in being in a time or a state of crisis. That everyone agrees to. What's the debate? What is the definition of being in a state of tzara, es tzara? Is it something which is external and concrete, like being attacked by an enemy, being attacked by a virus, having a famine, a drought? Is it something external? Or is by definition what we say existentially, the condition of living, a state of crisis? And that is the nature of living is by definition being in a state of loneliness, where no one really understands who and what you are. The definition of living is knowing that hayom kanu machar bakever, that our existence is fickle, it's whimsical, it's futile, it's tenuous, that we could, whether it's our health, whether it is our wealth, whether it is our very life, what we have today can be gone tomorrow. Think about those who had the majority of their assets with Bernie Madoff, and they get a phone call and they find out that their whole sense of confidence and comfort and solace they had, that they were protected, their family was taken care of, is gone in 1 minute. Think about in the year 2000, what happened to our brothers and sisters in Argentina when there was a run on the banks with the devaluation of the peso. And that's true with our health. Person's having a backache. They think maybe they pulled a muscle. They go and they have scans and they come back and the doctor says, you've got stage 4 cancer. It's metastasized throughout your body. And you have a death sentence. That is the nature of what it means to be a human being. And the Rav so beautifully articulated this. And Arnie Lustiger put it into the Chumash on page 94 and 95 of Sefer Devarim. The depth tzara of the Rambam is an inner, personal, clandestine, and undefined crisis, which is not readily manifest to the eye. It is perceived only by thinking and sensitive people who wish to identify with it. It can be evaded, shunted aside by superficial people who will thereby avoid being affected. Others, however, search for it and willingly accept it. The depth crisis is clear beyond solution. It is an existential reality, a condition of human existence. It will be felt more poignantly by persons of greater intelligence and imaginative perception. The wiser and more sensitive one is, the greater the crisis. It is rooted in man's essence, his metaphysical origin. It is existential. It's not social. It's not political or economic. The Torah bids man to actively combat and possibly eliminate superficial external crisis, For instance, the ills of poverty and disease and war are debilitating, and they impair our spiritual freedom. Virapo yirape, to build up a military to protect ourselves. All of the crisis that we talk about in Parshas Baaloska, we have an obligation to conquer. Okay? However, the Torah encourages man to submit to and embrace the experience of the depth crisis. Thereby does man truly grasp the reality of his condition and become stirred to great heights of the spirit. For this depth crisis, there is no solution except tefillah. A surface crisis can be overcome. The existential crisis can only be met by davening, by tefillah. Another idea, and we're going now back to the beginning of the parsha. We have the mitzvah d'oraisa of benching. Be'achalta v'savata v'irachtas Hashem Elokecha v'gomer. After having eaten and been satiated, one acknowledges Hashem. Now, there are a couple of issues. One is that when we say modim anachnu lach, we stand and we bow before Hashem. When we say no de lecha, we thank God for the mazon, for the land, for the various gifts that he's giving us in benching, there's no standing. Excuse me. There is no standing. We sit. Another halacha. A shikr, someone who's inebriated that davens, that's a toeva. It's not allowed to be done, and if it's done, it's an abomination. Yet on the other hand, if someone's inebriated, one can bench. So the Rav, in Arnie Lustiger's in the New Earth edition of the Masoret HaRav, on page 74, he addresses that. He says the following. There's a major difference between davening, tefillah, which by definition he quoted Kapitel Kuf Beis, right? Tefillah la'anikiya tof. A prayer of the afflicted when one is overwhelmed. Okay? As a proof, one may not pray from a highly situated place in a room. It's mimamakim, from a point, the Gemara in Brachos Daf Yud Amud Beis says, from a position altitudinally, physically, of humility. Okay, there's no elevation before the omnipresent. Birkas HaMazon, on the other hand, it encapsulates an entirely different attitude. It says, when you've eaten and you've been full, you've been satiated, that's when you acknowledge God, you make a bracha. Birkas HaMazon is recited on a full stomach to thank Hashem for the bounty and materials that he has given us. Bowing, which is symbolic of dependence and the insufficiency of the person, that reflects our perspective, our attitude in tefillah. But it's incongruous with Birkas HaMazon. And that's the distinction between someone who's shikr. Because being shikr conflicts with the prayer experience of feeling totally dependent upon Hashem. But it is compatible with Birkas HaMazon, which is meant to follow the experience of enjoying the material blessings that Hashem has given us and feeling totally content and satisfied by them. It's a different type of avoda. One is an avoda from a state of need, that's tefillah. The avoda of Birkas HaMazon is from a state of being saturated, of being taken care of being fulfilled. And it's a different modality in terms of where we're at physically, whether we stand and bow, whether we sit. It's a different modality in terms of what we say and how we say it. Another idea, the whole notion of making a bracha. The Rav addressed the issue that many have addressed. How in the world can a human being, someone who is hayom kanu machar bakever, how can a human being bless God? God is perfect. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is perfect. What can we give Hashem? Nothing. And that's why many of the Achronim, when they say Baruch Atah Hashem, it's Mikor HaBracha. It's an acknowledgement that Hashem is the source of all blessing. We're not blessing God. We're acknowledging that which He has given us, that which He has provided us, He is the provider. He is the source of all of that. We say, Mikor HaBracha, you, Hashem, are the source of this food, are the source of this, whether it is, let's say, experiencing Niagara Falls or experiencing thunder and lightning, whether it is a mitzvah that we're about to embark or engage in, we acknowledge that it all comes from Hashem, from Hashem's divine wisdom that He's provided us. And it gives us a perspective, it humbles us, it gives us a frame of reference. That's how many Achronim explain it. The Rav, in this particular instance, said we could explain it a little bit differently. After asking the question, how can flesh and blood, temporal man, referred to in the Tefillah as, you know, Tzitz Novel, Cheresh Hanishbar, right? A fading flower, a broken shard, a fleeting cloud. How can we approach the Melech Malchei Amlochim and say, Baruch Atah Hashem? The answer is that man must provide assistance, quote-unquote, as it were, to the Ribono Shel Olam. Man must help, quote-unquote, Hashem, to reveal his presence in the world. The Shechina, HaShochein Itam B'toch Tumasam, we say that in Tezayin, in Sefer Vayikra, Tezayin. We encounter the Shechina continually. Yet Hashem is not clearly revealed to us. He is hidden from view. Behold, I come to you in a cloud. He is indeed close, but he does not reveal himself. He is hidden from the world. Yoshev b'seser elyon, b'tzel shakai yislona. He dwells concealed. God is in close proximity to man, so close that man can almost touch him, but not everyone can penetrate the cloud to reveal him. Okay? For the physicist, the cloud is a mathematical formula. For the biologist, it is a biochemical reaction. For the physiologist, it's an instinct. For the psychologist, it's a drive. For the general, it's the power of his army. The cloud is any manifestation of nature or man that promotes the illusion that the world operates autonomously, concealing the reality that Hashem is responsible for all that occurs on earth. God can decide to disperse the obscuring clouds, and occasionally in history he chooses to reveal himself and say, Ani Hashem Elokeichem. More often, however, Hashem remains obscure. Hashem, which is Yoshev B'tzeiser Elyon. His abode is in transcendence. When one recites a bracha, he is saying the following, Ribono Shel Olam, you are hidden behind a cloud. No one sees you. Yet as I drink this glass of water, I reveal your presence. The very fact that I can eat, that my body absorbs food, that I can digest, indeed the entire biological process behind food consumption and the creation of food itself, it's a testimony to your presence. Through this recognition, I'm removing the obscuring cloud. I am revealing you. This is the notion of a blessing. What does it mean that we're blessing God, assisting or helping God? We're enabling humanity in the universe to perceive God's reality. Brachos are addressed to Hashem in the second person, Baruch Atah, rather than Baruch Hu. To affirm Hashem's very presence, it's before us, as if to say, where are you, Hashem? You are right here with me. How do I know? Because your presence is evident in this water I'm about to drink. The purpose of a bracha is to transform the hidden into presence. Through use of the second person singular, Ata, we reveal the divine presence directly in front of us. Wishing you a very meaningful Parshas Ekev, a very, very meaningful experience, whether it's in Tfilo, Ulavdo, B'chol Levavchem, Tfilo Ani Kiyatov, or whether it's the Avodas Hashem of Ve'achalta v'savata uveirachta Hashem Elokecha al aretz atov asher nasan lach. A very different type of avoda that's done from a state of satiation, of comfort and strength, as opposed to the avoda that represents the existential state, the existential depth crisis, the eis tzara that every human being is in constantly. Thank you.